Okay, one of the things that we're going to need to do, which is a little bit painful but necessary, is we need to get a list of members that are here for the record. Somewhere around, I had a notepad with a pen attached to it. No, it's down here. So if I could just get you to write your name in this notebook, that would be fantastic. Kristen, do you want to start? Okay. Kristen Powell, is it? Powell, yeah. That'd be great. Thank you, Pierre. So, welcome. And that concludes part one of the agenda. Now, seriously, I would like to say thank you to everybody that's come along today. And when we have the conference on and this room is full from front to back, that shows just how enthusiastic our community is, but it's also important for people to be involved in Linux Australia, the organisation, and the fact that you come along to this when so many people haven't. well, thank you very much. Let that not go on the record. The minutes, unlike some previous years, the minutes of the 2007 AGM were actually posted on the wiki. Is there anybody who has seen that? Okay, a few people have. what we need is a motion to confirm the minutes of the 2007 AGM, but it seems like a lot of people here haven't actually seen them. So is there anybody that would not want to go ahead until they've seen the minutes? No, yay. Thank you. All right, so the chair moves that the minutes of the 2007 AGM as posted on the Linux Australia wiki be accepted as a true and accurate record of events that took place. Seconded by Stuart. All in favour? Eight. Objections? No objections. Motion is carried. Reports from 2007 office bearers. Now, President's report. I'm going to channel Mark Turl for just a moment. My report is free! No, it's not quite like that. I don't have a written report to deliver at this time, but I'll follow up onto the Linux Australia mailing list with something once I am no longer officially in this capacity. But thank you for your faith. it's been an interesting year this year. It's been a year that hasn't had a lot of high visibility in terms of activity of the organisation, but there has actually been a lot that's happened behind the scenes. And I know that Pia actually has slides and everything prepared. We've listed, you know, some of the things that that have happened during the year. But one of the things that the committee has been focusing on, and that we've been very conscious of over the last 12 months in particular, but for the last couple of years, is trying to make it easy for Linux Australia members to operate officially in the capacity as a Linux Australia representative. And so we've had a number of people do things, undertake projects in the name of Linux Australia, who are not on the committee, which is fantastic, because that's exactly what I want to see happen a lot more. And we'll get to that in a moment when we get to some of the constitutional stuff. What we might do, and we won't do that now. Here, where are you? I can't see anything with these bright lights. Would you like to get up and do your Vice President's report? And other stuff that I would normally have covered in the President's report will come up anyway in just a moment. Stick this in if you like.
Come on. Okay, may as well just stand there. That's all right, it'll happen. There we go. I can't see you all. Oh, wow. Okay, there we go. This is wrong.
Hold it right back.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, well. Okay, hi, everyone. What I wanted to do was to just give a brief overview. First of all, it's been wonderful working with the rest of the committee this year. There's three things I want to briefly cover. There's things that LA have done, things that LA have facilitated, and things that were sort of in the spanner works, just so you've got a bit of a rough idea. In terms of the Links Australia itself, as John was saying, we're really trying to make sure that we're facilitating other people to do great stuff, because if the committee did everything, it wouldn't scale. So the things that we've done that have been relatively good this year, so we've had the minutes have been written, and written really well. Janet Horton's done an amazing job with those. And they're public and published, so anyone can get access to the minutes now quite easily through the website. The Treasury is now much more firmly under control under AJ, and strangely enough, Janet wasn't Secretary and AJ wasn't Treasurer, but they both did a great job with those roles. John's been fantastic with just running stable leadership. We've had a couple of ups and downs this year, some stuff behind the scenes that we had to deal with, and John's dealt with those really well. Okay. There's been good fiscal management of LCA, and LCA has been awesome, as we've all experienced, and has also, as AJ I'm sure will go through, been able to get a surplus to help LA do what it normally does and do great work. It facilitated GHOST and the other LCA handover stuff that needs to happen to make sure that Linux Conf AU continues to rock and to learn from year to year. There were booths that were actually sponsored directly by Linux Australia, and I think there were a couple of grants this last year, but not very many. And on that note, we do have a grant scheme, and if anyone has really great projects, they should absolutely put them to the Linux Australia Committee, and we obviously need to do a better job in pimping them, because we don't get enough grants through. Yes, there is a report. Paul? Yes, sorry, there was also a really good, actually I think I've got that on the next slide anyway.
Yeah.
That's facilitating other people. So the idea here is, and there's a lot more, but Linux Australia does put in funds for really great projects, and where money is needed for things like booths, it can actually do that where there's a really great reason. For some reason, my slides look... Yeah, I don't know how I got those. Sorry about that. So, but the big thing that LA has been trying to do and trying to work towards over the last sort of 5 years is really getting towards facilitating other people's enthusiasms, which sounds like a ridiculous buzz phrase, and yes, the people on the first board were responsible and they all apologised. But it really is all about taking our wonderful, growing, dynamic, awesome community and helping them do really cool stuff. Linux Australia is supposed to be effectively a tool for people to use to help, you know, get free software out there, to help educate people, to help do really cool stuff themselves with Linux and open source. So some of the examples of facilitating the enthusiasms of others, Janet Horton of her own bat wrote a OOXML submission to Standards Australia on behalf of Linux, and it was put forward on behalf of Linux Australia. Because, of course, putting in a submission like that and working with the Linux Australia Committee means that it ends up being, you know, not just from you, but from an organisation, which helps it. Marco Ostini did a fantastic submission to the new Treasurer about how he should look at open source and open source initiatives to help when he's looking at how to divvy up all the country's money.
Actually, you wouldn't have seen that yet, because that was done very rapidly and quite recently. Was it sent through to the list?
Was it?
Has anybody seen that submission to the Treasurer? No, I don't think it's actually been sent to the list yet. But yeah, Marco did a great job putting that together. He addressed a whole lot of concerns, and it was sent through as an official Linux Australia submission to the Treasurer as he goes about formulating the structure for the next budget. So that will be made public. It wasn't that we wanted to keep it secret, it's just that it was done very rapidly in order to meet the submission deadline for the Treasurer, and that'll be published very soon. So thanks to Marco for that.
Yes, definitely. There was all kinds of booths and different project that people did. Paul Schultz did work in the community. Connecting up. Right. Cool. So it was the Connecting Up conference, which is really bringing together the nonprofit or the NGO community and helping them understand about how open source can help them. Donna did stuff in a whole bunch of stuff in education, including going up to Brisbane for a large education event. I had some education stuff I did, including the Education Expo in Sydney. And there's been bunches of other people doing really great stuff and using the Linux Australia name to help them do that stuff better, working with us to do that. We had Software Freedom Day again, obviously, last year, and we had a lot of teams doing great stuff right around the country. In fact, I think that there's going to be additional representation on the Software Freedom International board from that. There was the OOXML Cyberlaw Workshop, which was effectively looking at the technical and legal ramifications and feasibility of OOXML. And we had Stands Australia come to that, and we had a lot of open source people participate in that, which was really great. The Australian Open Source Industry and Community Census, which you all know and have heard about, that Linux Australia participated in as a supporter. There were open CDs pressed for Monash, and other people have asked for open, getting a whole bunch of CDs pressed to give out to libraries and that kind of thing is a very, very good idea. So that's a great thing to ask for grants for. Barcamp, what's our participation in Barcamp?
Grants.
Grants, right. Another grant went to Barcamp. OSDC helping out with that for last year, a few months ago, and hosting for user groups. We already host for websites or mailing lists for a couple of different types of user groups, and want to continue doing that into the future. And this was an interesting one. One of the lugs had a server. The lug itself actually stopped, and they had hardware left over and wanted to redistribute it to another lug. And so we helped, and that came the request came through to LA, we put it through the LA mailing list, and then a request came through to Perth, and we managed to, I believe, successfully transition that server over to Perth. So it sort of ends up, again, playing that facilitation role. And some of the things that we hope to have planned, lug in a box, I think Steve will be working on at some point, but the idea of having all the software that a lug needs to run, so, you know, the website, mailing list, blog, whatever, and they can get a virtual server from LA. I don't think that's formally announced yet or anything, but that's one of the things that's planned to try and happen this year. Getting aliases. How many people here would like to have an open source .org.au alias? Yeah, a bunch. Cool. Okay, that's something that's definitely on the short-term horizon. If anyone wants to help with that, and we've had offers of help, then that's great.
That's already half done.
It's already half done. Excellent. We've already done the .org.au bit. Okay. Linux Australia, I actually just threw this in there because I've got LPC Australia on the brain at the moment. But yeah, there's definitely going to be a good role there working with LPC Australia, and we're going to make sure that LPC Australia will make sure that Linux Australia has a role to play in that to ensure that it gets good representation from the free and open source community. Lots of upcoming events for this year. Again, Software Freedom Day. Linux Australia will have representation at CBIT again, which is great, by the way, because 30,000 odd people go through to CBIT in Sydney, and when they see a community organisation and they can talk to us about what's this open source stuff about, and they're not getting a vendor pitch, but they're just hearing about the community side and the great personal side, then that always helps get more people into the community. And I think there's going to be a membership structure review as well. I'm not going to be on the board next year, this year, but those are some of the things that were planned. Pass back over.
Yep. Great.
Do you want the AGM stuff up?
That's all right. Just leave, you've got the stuff to bring up in a moment, so we'll get back to your laptop soon.
Okay, I'll leave that there. Sorry, I do just want to say one more very quick thing. It is every person's responsibility in our community, and particularly all of you care enough to be able to come along to the AGM, and everyone knows AGMs are not necessarily the most fun part of running an organisation, but it's everyone's responsibility to make sure the great stuff happens. And so all of you, you know, if you can think of great projects, if you want to run great projects, if you want to work with other people, then you should be making sure that you get involved and do those things and work with the LA committee to help you do those things better. So it's not a matter of, oh, I voted for the committee now, let's see what they do. It's a matter of, okay, what can I do this year and how can I better work with the committee? It's not what your committee can do for you, it's what, yeah. Anyway, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Pia. There are a couple of people that have just come in. We're taking a list of members that are present, so if you haven't got your name in here yet, Donna will bring the book down to you. Just stick your hand up. Anyone? Yes? A couple of back. Cool. All right. Well, we need a motion to accept the reports, what few reports there were. So Steve moves that the reports of the office bearers as presented be accepted. Yes, seconded by Hugh. All in favour? Steve Walsh. All in favour? Any objections? Nope, motion is carried. All right, so one of the things, a couple of things we missed out of the office bearers reports, you might have noticed that we haven't done treasurer or secretary. AJ is going to come up now. This is a little bit of an odd situation because towards the end of the year, AJ has largely taken over the treasurer's role. And Terry, our treasurer, is not actually here. So he's going to present the financials, which pretty much covers what would have been in the treasurer's report anyway. So AJ.
Hello, okay, that works. Okay, so these financials might not be incredibly readable on the projector. They're up on the website already, so on the wiki.linux.org.au AGM 2008, you'll be able to find a link to them. We have a balance sheet, a cash flow report, and a few profit and loss reports for the various activities that LA undertakes. So this report is for the financial year ended midway through last year. At the time, we had a few outstanding assets from a few outstanding sponsorship payments due for LCA 2007, which is why the total's a little bit low there. And is everyone here subscribed to the Linux Oz list? You might have seen the financials that I posted to that a couple of weeks ago, which was based on an annual year, so January 1st to December 31st, which is why these numbers are slightly different. Okay, so we've got a cash flow report as well, which will give you, which if you actually want to read through it, can give you an idea of where the money is going in big blocks. So I think you can see there that we get a lot of money from registrations and not as much money as we actually do get from sponsorship because, again, some of it came later in the year. And you can see through all the expenses on the bottom half of that page where all the money's going. So, yeah, that works. So the speaker's dinner, you can see, cost a little bit. The speaker travel, so getting speakers into LCA, costs a bit. The coding system we're using here, which if you want to go through this, is probably helpful to know, is we have a four-digit code which represents the type of expense, and a two-digit subcode, which represents the area. So the 07s are all the LCA 07 expenses and income. The 99s are what LA is responsible for. The 52 is the LPI training stuff. Okay, so there's not much point going through this, the cash flow report in detail, but if you want to check what LA is doing and make sure we're not rotting money out of the system or that we're not spending more money on travel than we could be or whatever else, then that's the thing to go through. One thing you can see down here is that at the end of last year we had a $6,000 GST credit owing us to the government. We haven't been taking care of the GST payments quite properly since the New Zealand tax thing got on top of us. We've spoken with the ATO about that, and I believe we'll be able to get on top of that fairly quickly this year. Okay, so as well as this, we've got a few profit and loss statements which give you an idea of For example, this is the administrative overhead, which we've allocated the interest that we receive on the money we hold, and the expenses like the credit card, administrative fees, insurance, face-to-face meetings, random hardware purchases and other stuff. So at the moment we're spending about $2,000 less than we receive in interest on that. So assuming you're happy with balancing that against interest, we're basically running the organization on the profits we make from the interest on the bank account. LCA 2006 oddly didn't do much in 2007. LCA 2007, on the other hand, did. So that's a rough idea of how much it costs to run an LCA. Again, a few bits of sponsorship were received after this period, and there were a few expenses done before it. So ghosts and some of the postcard printing. Oddly enough, LCA 2008 didn't do much before June last year either in expenses. Okay, the grant scheme is pretty much that. It doesn't have any income, it's just all expenses, and we spent about $6,500 in the financial year last year. Up till December 2006 was reported on at the AGM last year. Special projects is some of the odd things that we do. So the $24,000 there was the John Lyons payment we made out from the Dunedin collections and elsewhere. And otherwise there are a few flights and a few random things. The Mirror project doesn't actually get much money. We buy it a hard drive now and then. We need another one from Stephen. LPI, we basically try and break even on, so we collect some money from LPI proctoring and as the LPI host association, and then basically send it all overseas. And that's about it. So if there are any questions that people want to ask now about that, that's fine. Otherwise, you can also ask on the list if you want to actually review this stuff in detail. Okay.
Thank you, AJ. So I think we also need a motion to accept the financial report, do we not? That was a lot of hands that went up. Closest person to me. So Stuart moves that we accept the report by AJ on the financial activities of the organisation for the fiscal year ended 30th of June 2007. Did I put words in your mouth there? Seconded by Steve Hanley. All in favour? Eight. Objections? We haven't had any objections yet. It's really boring. You object. Okay. Motion is carried. All right. Now, for liability reasons and various things like that, we also need to have a motion that the membership endorses the activities. Are you preempting what I'm saying? Okay, excellent. So we have a motion from Andrew that we... Sorry, Andrew, the other Andrew. Okay, well, how about we have one Andrew move it and the other Andrew second it? Okay, Andrew Pam moves that the membership endorse the activities of the Linux Australia Committee. And that's seconded by Andrew Cowie. All in favour? All right. Any objections? No. Motion is carried. Thank you. Now, on to the interesting bit, because we really don't know what's going to happen with this, do we? In a shock announcement, so congratulations to the new committee. So we have Stuart Smith as president, Steve Walsh as Vice President. Yes, that's right. Wave. Let everybody know who you are. Secretary Terry Dawson is way up that way somewhere. He's waving. Anthony Towns as Treasurer. And the members are Melissa Draper, James Turnbull, and Paul Schultz. Yeah, so congratulations, everybody. Actually, one thing I need to clarify. As a point of order, do we need a motion to accept these? Sorry, Andrew, was that a no? No? Cool. Okay. Now, we get on to a couple of things. Actually, Pia, I'll need your laptop for the wording of this, and it's locked. Is everybody aware of the motions that I've proposed regarding amendments to the Constitution? I don't hear any no's. Anybody not aware of it, never heard of it? Okay. I'll give you the 30-second rundown, and then I'll go through through the specific wording. Cool. Can we do a... Okay. So these are some amendments to the Constitution that I proposed to the committee sort of early-ish last year. And the general motivation for it was some discussions that I'd had with a number of people, notably Stuart Smith, Andrew Cowie, and a few other people, about the role of the committee and how it relates to the organisation and the membership itself. One of the things that my perceptions, at least, when I came onto the committee was that there was a general feeling among the Linux Australia membership that the committee are the people responsible for executing projects in the name of Linux Australia. And what the organisation is about is not blessing a very small number of people to do things. It's about providing a mechanism and a vehicle for all members to be able to do things in the name of Linux Australia. And so the role of the committee is seen as a group of people that execute projects, when really it should be a board of governance, or the role should be providing oversight for the organisation and not necessarily taking on every single thing themselves. So that got me thinking about how we could fix that problem. And there are a couple of other things that came into it as well. For example, the problem that we have at the moment with a total lack of diversification of income. At the moment, close to 100% of our income, other than Paul's efforts at coffee fundraising, comes from surplus from LCA. And also we've had a number of people say to me, it'd be really cool if I could pay for membership of Linux Australia because I want to support the organisation. Which is not necessarily to say that people should have to pay to be a member, but individual members have actually said that they want to support the organisation financially, and at the moment there really just aren't the mechanisms in place to do that. So in light of all of that, I came up with a number of proposed amendments to the Constitution. There are a couple of them that are, you could, I suppose, just consider bug fixes. There is some wording in the Constitution that came from, I think the Constitution originally was a template, or it was a standard document that is used by lots of organisations, and so there is some stuff in it that could simply be removed. For example, it had mention of a membership fee in the Constitution. In practice, this hasn't actually been enforced, but according to the Constitution, there is actually a membership fee required to be a member of Linux Australia. to number zero. Yep, okay. Cool. So the Constitution, as it's currently worded, includes the wording there under current wording. So what I've done is I basically did a diff on the current wording and what I thought the wording should be in a number of parts of the Constitution. And hopefully those of you that have never heard of that have had time to have a quick look through this now. So what I propose to do is propose motions to apply these amendments to the Constitution, and we'll go through them one at a time. So the first one is removal of the explicit membership fee from the Constitution. The first section there is the explanation, and then the wording below that is the way I would go about changing that. So for example, under section 8.1 here, it currently says membership fee of $20, and we just remove it, so we specify that it's the fee that is determined by the committee. So we'll work through these one at a time. Does anybody have any particular questions or comments about this alteration to the Constitution? Yes, Julian. Sorry? The question was, are there any potential issues with not explicitly saying that zero is allowed or is a reasonable fee? I don't think so, because the wording is that it states that the fee will be as determined by the committee. So that could be any scale that you like. Yeah. So for the record, Andrew just said that there is also a clear track record of what's been occurring over the previous 5 years. So, yeah. Okay, so I propose a motion that the constitution be amended according to the changes as laid out on the wiki. So I'll propose that motion. Would anybody second that motion? So Pierre seconds the motion. All in favour? Okay, excellent. Account? We'll just do, are there any objections? That's the other thing I should point out. Because this is actually an amendment to the Constitution, the threshold is higher. It's not a simple majority. We actually need 3/4 of members present and voting for the motion to be carried. And I think that was anonymous. Not anonymous. Unanimous. So, yes, and there were no abstentions. Anyone abstain? Okay, so 2 abstains. We have 1 abstention. Any objections? No, we have no objections. So the motion is carried. Thank you. Likewise, this is one that is really just a trivial bug fix, I suppose. It's simply clarifying that we allow acceptance of applications for membership online. And this, once again, is probably just a legacy of the origin of the Constitution itself. So, once again, this is... Sorry? Oh, the Constitution used to contain the form. Oh, okay.
John? Just one question. Does constitutional change require a minimum quorum of attendance? Does anyone know?
We have a very low threshold for that. Yes. According to the current constitution, the quorum, I think, is 5 members present. Is that right?
Is it not the case that email constitutes a form of writing already?
That has been the practice. Essentially, this is ratifying the practice that we have been... it's amending the constitution to match the practice of what we're actually doing.
So if I can just head off this whole discussion, one of the problems with the associations in Australia is that the way that associations are formed is that unless you do something about it, you inherit this stock set of bylaws or constitution, depending on whether it's a proprietary limited company nationally or incorporated at state level, makes no difference really. But the act contains this sort of template, which is kind of like 1950s language. And really inappropriate for, you know, the modern age, like telephones. So really the stuff that John is doing right now is just to like kind of you and the membership can then move things on top of that to fix that. The very first thing I did with the first board meeting of my corporation was lay down all the freaking 200 pages of fixes we were doing to override the act. The escape valve for this is that the act does provide some, one of the lovely things about Australia as a legal jurisdiction is there's an enormous common sense factor. And so even if an organization does something that's really stupid, if it just doesn't make any sense to the reasonable person, which is how jurisprudence works, then you know the membership has legal recourse to sort it out. Otherwise, you just let the board get on with it.
Thank you, Andrew. All right, so as I mentioned, this is actually a trivial change. There are really only a few words. There's a lot of context there and not much that's changed. It's the section down there which specifies how it should be accepted. Do you want to grab this? Sure. So, once again, I propose...
I don't mean to be difficult, but sure. if the statement that in writing means all of those things, do you need to add more words to say the same thing? I'm just curious. I like simple, so...
Sure. Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
It's not defining writing there, it's just defining how it's lodged. It's just saying that it can be lodged in all kinds of different ways. So writing, I believe, is already defined in the Constitution to include online writing. Yeah, so I believe that's already covered. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're saying it's an unnecessary addition.
I actually agree with that.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. No problem. Okay, well, that's fine. If the motion doesn't carry, that's fine. This is just an attempt at clarification. So I'll propose the motion. If people object, that's cool. So I'll propose that we apply an amendment to the Constitution as outlined under Section 2 on the wiki. Do I need a seconder?
So the one major difference is that it allows the online form, which isn't technically lodging it with the secretary, which is what the current requirement is.
Okay.
And so at the moment, when you apply to be a member of Linux Australia, you have a whole email exchange, which is basically what's required by the Constitution, and there's no flexibility in how to change that.
Yeah.
So it's mostly just about making that possibly more flexible if we choose to change MemberDB at some point.
So it could be done simply by submitting an online form?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right, Paul?
Quick question. Can you have an online form in Second Life?
Let's not go into that right now. Yeah.
It is a valid point because now defining these things, and going back to the writing thing, you're saying made by the applicant in writing, but you're only defining how it can be lodged to the secretary. So maybe what you actually really want to change is the first clause rather than the second.
Okay, hang on, we'll just have, I don't want to drag this out too long. Janet had a comment first.
Hi, is it possible just to say that we'll specify how things can be lodged, and then we separate out the document that defines the appropriate ways to lodge in a separate document that doesn't have to be the Constitution but will be available on the website, and that way we can be more adaptive with it?
No, it'll need to be part of the Constitution.
If you pull it out of the Constitution as a piece of changing trivia, then that's probably easier.
Yeah, I don't want to get into a huge debate over wording of this now. I mean, if people don't think that this is a reasonable change, that's fine. We can come up with an alternative way to do it, but this meeting's going to go on for an hour otherwise. Yeah.
Changing stuff. Yeah, we either have to accept this version or just not accept this one at all, because to propose a different wording requires another, like, 14-day notice period.
That's right. It's actually 21 days.
So we pretty much just need to decide, do we want this one or not, rather than debating the exact content now.
So that's right. This is a separate motion. All right. So to be clear, what I'll do is put the motion for this wording as I have listed here. If this motion isn't carried, then other changes can be made, but that would have to be done at a later time because we don't have the necessary, we can't do that here. So I propose the motion that the Constitution be amended as according to point two on those amendments listed on the wiki. So I need someone to second that. So Hugh, all in favour? Okay, this one's going to be closer. We might actually have to take account on this. Objections? And we have 8 objections. Any abstentions? Yeah, so we haven't reached the required... No, but it needed is it of the voting members or of members present? Okay, so abstentions don't count in the total. Okay, I need to get someone else to do a count just to make sure, because We need to be sure about this. We need to get this right. All in favour? And I need someone else to stand up and do a quick count, just to make sure. Oh, hands up if you're in favour. I get 28. You got 29? Okay. Objections? 28.5. Objections? Oh, we've got more people voting now than we had earlier. I got 13. I'm not counting myself. Okay. Yeah, we're not getting a clear majority on that. So I think we're going to have to say that motion is rejected. But that's all right. All right, so three, changes to the office bearer election process. Now, this is probably one of the more major changes. At the moment, what we have is four office bearers, the executive positions, president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. One of the issues that we faced this year was that AJ and Terry essentially flipped roles during the year. Basically because their interests were different. So by the end of the year, AJ was fulfilling the treasurer's role, even though he was not actually elected as treasurer. Well, technically, I suppose the treasurer delegated his role to somebody else. But the short version is that it's not actually necessary to have the treasurer and the secretary as elected positions. In most organisations, they're actually nominated out of the board or whatever it happens to be. So really what this is doing is changing the constitution so that the structure of the committee is more in line with, you know, the way other organisations of this type are run. So the crux of the proposal is that the treasurer and secretary positions are no longer specifically elected positions, but they are positions that are selected from the committee. So we have a president and vice president as specifically elected positions, and then we have five ordinary committee members. Andrew.
Does that permit the treasurer and or secretary to be the president and or vice president? Are they counted as part of the committee?
Technically, yes. Any member of the committee could fulfil that role.
Although, is there a minimum number of offices? Can you have one person be president, treasurer, and secretary?
Yeah, you have. Sorry? Yeah, you still have to have five ordinary committee members. So the actual size of the committee is unchanged. It's simply a question of who fulfils the particular roles. I agree. And that was one of the problems with the organisation in the early days, like prior to the AGM in Perth. There were a very small number of members and people fulfilling multiple roles. Yes?
So I see a bit of a problem in not explicitly electing people for the treasurer or the secretary position, in that people explicitly stand for these roles for a reason. They stand for a secretary because they know what the position of secretary means and entails, and therefore they stand particularly for that position, ready to fulfill that role. Now let's say we've got five people standing as ordinary committee members, and none of them is really interested in fulfilling the secretary role or the treasurer role. Then you're going to have to appoint somebody out of those five into that role and force them to do a job that they weren't really prepared to do. And I don't think that's a really good progress. Now, the situation we concretely had in the last year solved itself by just internal committee reorganization. And I think that was good enough. That was fair enough. I would not want to force that particular problem we had to force a change in our constitution.
Okay. I think Stuart's going to say something about that.
So the big thing is not so much removing, sort of saying this person should be this role or standing for that role. The way I always envisioned this working was that someone would stand saying, I want to be treasurer, I want to be secretary, and we wouldn't really get a conflict and just get one person in there and everyone agrees. The big thing is switching roles or people get busy and whether we need to hold a whole online election again just to sort of swap that around. This way sort of makes it a bit nicer and a bit more sort of in tune with how a bunch of other organizations and boards work. Sort of explicitly electing a treasurer does mean that if someone doesn't stand for the position, we have no way of filling it without doing a whole election process. You can't just get someone from there. No easy way.
In love, I'm pretty sure we solve this problem that the committee can appoint somebody to the role if somebody else resigns. Yeah. So is that not in the default constitution?
I think it is. Jeff?
It seems like you're fixing at the wrong end. As a member, I value the ability to specifically vote for someone to fill the treasurer and secretary role. The problem that you had this year, and they will have a responsibility to me because they've been elected to that role, and the problem that you had this year is can be solved simply by allowing the board to appoint. So from my memory of certainly Slug's constitution, which is very similar to what this is based on, the board can do that. So both could resign and be appointed as different things, and it can be arranged purely within the board. This has, I agree with Sylvia, quite a dramatic change on how members elect their representatives and what responsibilities they choose for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andrew Penn?
I considered Sylvia's objections, and I do agree that there's some merit to that, that voting specifically for people who are keen and willing to fulfil those particular roles does have some merits. But I think that Jeff's point was one I also wanted to make, that I don't think it's really feasible for the organisation to continue absent a treasurer and a secretary. They are necessary roles that must be filled. And so whatever else we do need to allow some mechanism for the committee to appoint a treasurer and secretary as and when that becomes necessary. So this is one proposal that incorporates that, but I think it's kind of ended up being two proposals mixed into one, which is always a bad thing to have to vote on. I think we really need one proposal that permits the committee to appoint treasurer and secretary as required, and another proposal that that they no longer be directly elected, because those are two separate things and they should not have been proposed as a single combined motion.
Okay. John? I don't want to... Once again, we could be here debating stuff all day, so just a couple more comments.
My quick suggestion is, I mean, because we've got a fairly simple online voting process rather than other organisations where you have to have, voting is a more formal by paper or whatever, I mean, is it simple enough to... We elect a treasurer and secretary position. If they wish to resign, they resign, and we just elect another person. I mean, it's a matter of 14 or 30 days' notice and putting up an online voting thing. Yeah, but that way it's our responsibility to say, yes, okay, this is the person we're happy to have as treasurer or secretary, rather than the board making that decision. I mean, it's trivial for us to hold another election. It's not like it's difficult. And, we've got to get the Australian Electoral Commission to do stuff for us.
Okay. Andrew, down the back.
So just as a counterpoint to this, because I have to disagree with Jeff as a matter of policy. most organizations have none of this bullshit. You elect a board of directors who are all peers from amongst their own member of their own time. They pick a chairman of that board, and likewise, the secretary is also appointed from the membership of directors, the group of people who are directors. The membership has no need to muck about messing around with who's going to be the secretary, who's going to be the treasurer of the organization, blah, blah, blah. So I personally found when John landed on the motions in front of us, I found it as a compromise. Either you guys stick with your, I have to directly elect the secretary because I feel I have to have some say in it, or you just let it go and let the people that, as a group, you elect to be a board. Because after all, on a board, they are all carrying collective responsibility and their votes are all equal. So frankly, who's the secretary and who's the treasurer is irrelevant. And it is the board's responsibility under the terms of the Constitution that there be a secretary and a treasurer and a chairman.
Okay. Now, we just have one final comment from Pia, and then we'll... put it to a motion.
I think that the main point that was made there that I think is the most appropriate is that we need to make sure that someone actually cares enough about those roles to actually do the roles, and one of the best ways to ensure that is that there is a role that someone actually has to run for so that they know that they're going to do it. Otherwise, I think Sylvie's point is the most important out of those. You end up with 7 people, potentially, of which none want to do the treasurer or the secretary, and then you'll get a crappy job. If you actually have someone run for it, even if you have to, if the committee has to reappoint that position, which I think is totally reasonable, is already covered by the Constitution, then that's totally fine, but at least there is someone who has to delegate that position in the first place.
Okay. All right. One last comment, and then we'll go with the motion.
But I'm just wondering, is that any different from nobody standing for the treasurer position? If nobody stands for the treasurer position, then aren't we in the same boat? There's no one to vote for, and therefore the committee has to decide amongst the committee who's going to manage the books.
All right. Now we need to vote on it. Let's just vote on it. Sorry. Okay. Special dispensation to someone affected by the situation personally.
Yeah, so whether you're elected or not, it's still a crappy job. So the rule in the current constitution is, in the event of a casual vacancy occurring in the membership of the committee may appoint a member of the association to fill the vacancy, and that lasts until the next AGM. So if no one runs for it, then the committee that is elected would need to find someone to fill the role and then appoint them. And it doesn't actually say that you have to agree to the appointment, but I guess that would come under retirement or something.
Okay. So let's not waste any more time. It sounds like there are some different perspectives on this, but we'll just vote on it and we'll see what happens. So I propose that the constitution be amended as according to the wording in section 3 on the wiki. So anybody wanting to second that? Sorry? Scroll down there. Oh. It's essentially converting office bearers as a general list to president and vice president. Okay, Trent, are you seconding the motion? Yep, so the motion is seconded by Trent. All in favour? Okay, objections? That was 17. Yep, at least as many. So the motion has failed. Okay. Now, this is probably comes down to the crux of the whole situation for me in terms of perception of the committee and the difference between committee or board as oversight and as executive body. So in some ways you could say that this is a silly change. It's changing one word. Instead of referring to it as a committee, it's referring to it as a council. And there are other terms that could be used for it. It could be referred to as the board or whatever. But after some discussion on the mailing list, a couple of people felt fairly strongly that council was a good word to describe the nature of the body as a representative group of the community, rather than typically a committee is a group that is put together to work on a particular task or project or exercise, while the committee in Linux Australia is a group that provides oversight and governance. So this particular change is really the main basis in terms of what I'm wanting to do with change perception of the committee and getting other people involved in Linux Australia without being on the committee itself, but being active in officially appointed groups to undertake specific projects. So that's the sum total of it. It's just changing the wording from committee to council. Nathan, you have a comment?
There we go. My question is whether the control and manage to direct and oversee actually changes our legal... So my understanding of a memorandum of association is essentially it's got two purposes in general. One is to stop people doing a hostile takeover, and the other is to stop the management committee from running off with the money. So that's basically what you're trying to do, is make sure that it runs in a sane way. I'm just concerned that the control and manage to direct and oversee may actually remove the responsibility from the committee of being fiscally responsible for, you know, financial expenditure and whatever. Is there a decrease in legal meaning there?
Okay, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say. The word from the back of the room was no from Andrew. Does anybody else have any comments on that? Nope. Are there any other questions or comments about this particular alteration? Jeff?
I object to this change because I think it's window dressing, and to change the perception of how the committee operates within the community actually has to be done through action rather than changing the word. Changing the word is not going to change the behaviour of the committee. I think a good example of this is in November I found out that the committee actually had published minutes. Previous to that I had absolutely no idea because those minutes not announced to the membership. Other organisations that I participate in actively announce the minutes to the membership, which is a way of creating discussion, raising awareness of what the committee is doing, and so on. And the whole the charter that was rewritten a few years back includes the phrase facilitating the enthusiasms of the membership, and I think that while the committee certainly doesn't have a responsibility to do everything and shouldn't be regarded as having that responsibility, they do take responsibility for doing the facilitation of the enthusiasms of the membership. And I think that that behaviour needs to change, and changing this word does absolutely nothing towards changing that behaviour. It's not a perception issue, it's an action issue.
Okay. Any other comments? Nathan, I think you're...
Sorry. I affirm your words, Jeff, but I disagree. I actually do think that there is perception in wording, so I actually don't mind the change of committee to council. I'm just concerned about the responsibilities.
Sure. Was there someone else down here? Yeah, Shudder.
Are there any legal ramifications from changing committee to council? I mean, it sounds like a single word substitution, but really, is there any meaning behind this in law?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, then what's the point of changing it then? We don't know what the potential implications might be.
Okay, the correct answer is we do not believe that there is any change. Kim says she doesn't believe there is any change either, so thank you, Kim.
This is not legal advice, but...
She is a lawyer, but she's not your lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. I can't see why that would make any difference legally at all.
Okay. Thank you. Well, no one else, so let's put this one to a vote. Once again, I move that the constitution be amended according to the wording in section 4 as listed on the wiki. Any seconder? Hugh seconds that. All in favour? Okay. Objections? 5 objections. Okay. I think the motion is carried. Yeah, it was clear majority. Do you want to account? Sorry? Oh, it was easily that. Yeah. Okay, any abstain? Okay, so 5 abstain, 6 abstain. Okay, motion is carried. So, where are we up to? Okay. All right, so general business and questions from the floor. Is there any general business that needs to be raised at this time? Yes? Sorry, Nathan, you have the...
I would like to just ask, has anything been done about looking at more incorporating org in their demise or in their... moving on, they were our predecessor, they are our history, and I think as a organisation we should be looking at inclusive ongoing business if that is possible.
Okay, I can address that very briefly if you like. For those of you that don't know, there has been discussion on the org mailing list and various other places that the organisation be wound up and its assets transferred to an appropriate entity. The short answer is that that's an issue for org. Obviously, they have their own membership, their own business, their own constitution, and we shouldn't meddle in that. I was invited along and attended the org annual general meeting a couple of months ago, which was in Melbourne, and the outcome from that was that they acknowledged that their organisation is not in a sustainable position at the moment, and that unless they did make major changes, the organisation was not going to continue. So what they were planning to do from that point on was to examine whether the organisation could be restructured and whether that was a feasible thing to do. So they were then going to go to their membership with a ballot asking whether the organisation should be wound up or reformed with a different focus or whatever was necessary. I don't know what the outcome of that is, but that will happen in their own time. I'm personally on very good terms with many members of Org, and I hope things go really well for them. But that really is a matter for them. And I can see a situation in the future where perhaps there is some form of amalgamation. I don't know what form it would take. But right now, there is nothing to report, really. It's just a matter of letting them go through their internal issues. So, yeah, John.
So we discussed this earlier in the week, but it's something I wanted to bring up. A couple of months ago, email went to the mailing list stating that LA was in a position to offer insurance to other lugs around the country. And I'll let you explain why that's not possible at the moment. But I think it's mainly a communication issue in that we emailed, called bug people on IRC to try and organise that for ourselves for Slug, and we just got no responses back as to whether it could happen, whether it couldn't, or what. And in the end, I think it was a last-minute jump before our last meeting to make sure that we were actually covered. So yeah, just where that's at, and if there's anything that we can do to sort of solve those communication issues.
Sure. Okay, well, there are probably two different issues there. I was going to pull something up on here, but I don't seem to have network access. In conjunction with these constitutional changes, there was a multi-tier membership system that was proposed. My understanding of the issues with regard to extending public liability insurance to other bodies is the relationship between Linux Australia as an organisation and who that other body happens to be. If it's an ad hoc group of people and they are undertaking activities in the name of Linux Australia, that's a very clear situation where we can extend public liability insurance because it's an activity of Linux Australia. So in the case of, for example, a very small LUG which does not have an incorporated association, then that LUG's meetings could be considered to be meetings of Linux Australia. And if we recognise those meetings, it's covered, everything is fine. The issue that we have with Slug, for example, is because I believe it's a non-profit association or something similar. Unless there is some form of relationship between the two organisations that is acknowledged or recognised, then we can't extend public liability insurance because as a non-profit association, you're responsible for your own PLI. So anyway, the point of all of that was that what I'm hoping to do by the way of clearing the way for multi-level memberships is to have another class of membership which basically allows other organisations to become members of Linux Australia. And that the main purpose for that would be to allow incorporated Linux user groups to become associate members or whatever the term happens to be, which means there is then that that association between the two organisations, and we can then cover the public liability insurance for the LUGs. And I think that would be a really useful thing for Linux Australia to be able to do. Because PLIs, it's a pain, basically. It's expensive. It means you've got to start collecting fees from members in order to cover it. There are other ways around it. For example, Linux Australia could simply pay for PLI for a LUG, but at the moment we can't directly provide it. Hopefully we'll be able to fix that really, really soon, though. Just one second. Sorry, what was that? Affiliate members, yeah, or whatever the term happens to be. As long as there is some recognised relationship and we can say Sydney Linux Users Group Incorporated is a member of Linux Australia Incorporated, then that's fine. Just a moment, Arian had a comment, didn't he?
LA did support the public liability for another conference. How does that compare to Slug? Why was that possible, not Slug?
Was the conference?
It was a different incorporated non-profit. Well, this happened to be OSDC, which is Open Source Developers Club Incorporated, which worked out fine.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I'm not
so we did that. It all worked.
Okay. Just a second. I think AJ or Steve might have an answer to how that was done.
So that was done a little bit seat of the pants and complicatedly, and that was made possible because LA was a sponsor
of the event.
OSDC. So presumably something similar could be arranged with Slug and other things, but I don't actually recall seeing the email from Slug, and I think when I heard of it, it was a couple of weeks ago. Is that the right time? Okay, yeah.
That brings us to the other issue which John raised, which is lack of communication. Yeah, and that is a serious issue. Irrespective of whether we could have done it or not, we definitely could have done a better job with responding to the request, even if it was an answer simply saying, no, sorry, we can't do it. Unfortunately, the Linux Australia Committee has been fairly slow in responding to some things recently, so I apologise for that, and perhaps that can be my successor can do a better job and show me up. Jeff?
Perhaps a really good outreach effort would be for Linux Australia to offer to sponsor logs. In terms of real difference that can be made by perception via outreach and action, LA being a sponsor of Slug would be totally cool, because Slug people would see LA being involved in the community, and you can solve the neat little sponsorship insurance issue.
Yeah, okay.
And just to add to that, the luck in a box is probably one way of sponsoring, so that's already connecting up the different lucks to LA, right?
Yeah, that's true. Thanks, Sylvia. So that would be something positive that LA could do directly for a lug. Andrew?
And I note that there was an email this morning pointing out that there's all this monthly grant money that's unspent, so we could even potentially delegate those downwards to the lugs and give some small amount of grant money to lugs so that they can do localized grants. It's just a suggestion.
Yeah, good suggestion. Okay. Thank you. Yes, Paul? Yeah, so move on to the next issue. Yep. Okay.
I ran a fundraiser for Linux Australia Coffee a while back, and I posted to the Linux Australia email list, so probably you all know this, but I thought I'd take this opportunity to encourage people to go back to your lugs and promote this locally. Basically, the company I was working with, Kaldi, kaldi.com.au, now has on their website, you can order coffee, and when you, in one of the options for each bag is select your non-profit organisation that they will give the profits to. Linux Australia is one of those. And if you can get 9 kilograms of coffee in a group, which is probably easily doable in a largish lug, or go to your friends and so forth, and I or Kaldi can post you flyers that have order forms on them. If you want to organise this, if you can get 9 kilograms or more, they will ship it to you with shipping free. So you just pay for the coffee, and it's about 40% of that goes to Linux Australia. And I know Steve Hanley and other people in the Canberra group that I've been working with have been ordering, I think Tony Breeds as well, have been ordering coffee off that. So hopefully that's showing up somewhere, but I'd really encourage people to go back to your lugs and your communities, and this is a good outreach thing to say, I'm promoting Linux Australia, etc. The website is www.kaldi.com.au, and it's probably just, it's on the main web page to order coffee from there.
Okay. Is there any other general business to be raised? Jeff?
Some of you may be bored by this, but it's an issue that needs to be represented, and I think that if no one else represents it, then I need to be the LA member that does. There's a substantial portion of the open source community that doesn't feel represented by Linux Australia, and a huge amount of activity in Australia that isn't sort of part of our community knowledge. A couple of examples of this is OSDC didn't have a relationship with Linux Australia for a very long time. That's only recently changed. There's a Joomla Day today that I didn't know about.
through Linux Australia related channels for months, and then it only came up on the mailing list the other day. And there are plenty of other open source activities and organizations that are in the Australian community that, while they don't feel specifically excluded by LA, they don't feel included by LA. And at some stage, I would like the organization to ensure that some outreach is made to make those people feel as if they can be represented by this community. Because I certainly feel, given my allegiances to Linux and all that kind of stuff, I feel represented, but there is a massive, massive audience of people out there that don't come into our little orbit simply because we choose a particular project as the community's name.
So the crux of what you're raising is the name of the organization?
Yeah. And certain behaviors related to that.
Yeah. Sridhar?
I largely agree with Jeff. I'm not referring to the name or anything in particular, but I have been spending the past week in my conversations with people here at LCA, asking them if they're involved in their LUG, asking them, you know, just general questions, what they do in the community and so on. And most people really don't do that much, even though they may work in free software and whatever. They just don't feel that LA has anything to offer them, that their LUG might not have anything to offer them. And I think we could probably do a lot more to make them feel included. As to what that is, I'm not sure, and I'm open to discussions, and I'm sure we could take this onto the list.
Okay, I think James was going to say something earlier.
Just covering the Joomla Day thing, they did actually apply to be a mini-conf and didn't get in. We had no idea that they were going to run Joomla Day. We only heard about it when they sent the LA list as well. So.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to comment just on the name. I'm not commenting on the name issue. I'm conflicted about it. But I largely agree with inclusiveness. But I would say that that's a two-way street. So LUGs have to also offer services that interest other open source groups. LA is not the only person carrying the banner here. And if they can help LA help LUGs actually further that stuff, great. But I think it's also there are other parties involved here.
And I think you had a comment, unless you've gone back to sleep.
I'd like to say, you know, in our attempts, certainly here in Melbourne, to be more, reach out to other groups, I think we've been doing that. We tried with Software Freedom Day to bring in computer banks and the PHP user groups and actively work together with Open Source Developers Club. Today I'm really excited to see that the Melbourne PC Users Group is here, which is one of the largest, user groups in the world. That's actually, you know, there's been a number of attempts to get those guys involved and they're here today. So, you know, I actually disagree that we're not working in that way. And I also don't think that LA has to be the be-all and end-all. I think so long as we're working with other groups, then that's acceptable.
Down the front here, you had a comment first.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to pick, take that what Jeff was saying apart a little. I think it's very much right that we be inclusive, but the point's already been made, it is very much a two-way street. I don't know that it's reasonable to expect Linux Australia to go and find all things, nor is that necessarily what you're saying, Jeff, but I think we need to be perhaps conscious of some of the social interactions that revolve around some open source projects, and we aren't perhaps necessarily as a group the best of communicators at times, and perhaps there is a little bit of an onus on the projects themselves. If the situation was that the Noki project came to Linux Australia and they never returned our emails, calls, and, you know, dead moose head in the bed, that sort of thing, then I think we'd have a problem on their hands. But I think the problem would tend to be more that the Noki project or whatever it is isn't actually approaching Linux Australia in the first place, and ergo, we don't know they're there.
Okay. Pia, and I think Trent had a comment after that.
I don't think that it's about, and it has never been about, LA being the be-all and end-all. In fact, in 2003, when I ran around speaking to almost every person at LCA in Perth, I had a few people saying, you know, oh, but we don't want this controlling force. LA has always meant to be an upside-down umbrella, a supporting organization for the community. And I think what Jeff's saying, and I totally agree with this, and you all know that I disagree with him every so often, so, you know, don't want to hear anything about that. But the whole point is that LA could be a great place for everyone to want to post stuff, to let people know about things, to post events, as a way for everyone from all the different perspectives of our community, whether they be Linux or Joomla or PHP or whatever. Sorry? WordCamp in Melbourne. Am I doing a pimp unintentionally here for something? but yeah, WordPress and stuff as well, like anything. It's a place that people want to go to. I don't believe that it is true that, you know, no one's not doing anything. I don't think that's what's been suggested. What's been suggested is that if LA was doing more outreach, and if it was such that it was easy for people to get involved in, and perhaps the name is turning some people off, and if that's the case, we need to look at that, then it could be the hub for everyone to exchange ideas and exchange events and to be stronger as a total community. I agree with that completely.
Trent, I think, is next.
I think it's important to realise that obviously Linux Australia and Linux user groups were generally formed originally as a representative thing of Linux and not of open source. And if the people in those communities really feel that we should be embodying all of open source, I think that really needs to be a conscious decision, not just we should support open source because we're involved with Linux. I mean, I think it's a great idea personally, but I think there needs to be a very conscious, okay, we're now going to, you know, be more of an open source users group, not a Linux users group, because, you know, the roots are, it's a Linux users group and Linux Australia, and if those roots are no longer correct, that really needs to be much more of a conscious thing than just, oh, we should do that because Linux is part of the open source community.
So we should stop calling them LUGs and call them OSAGs or something. OSAGs. OSAGs. OSAGs.
That may not be appropriate, especially for LUGs, more so than maybe Linux Australia, but that's just something to think about.
Okay, John. Had a comment.
I mean, sort of going back to naming to some degree, but if we did want to create, say, an open source Australia or whatever, I think Sylvia raised a point just now, it's critical that we do that in collaboration with all those other groups, with the Ruby groups, the WordPress groups. You all have to come together to create that. LA just changing its name and just trying to push that lead, I think to some degree is going to alienate those guys.
Okay, Jeff and then Andrew.
Oddly enough, this has all happened before and it will all happen again for Battlestar Galactica fans. When in 2003, way earlier than 2003, when LA first started, everyone was like, oh my God, that's fascist Sydney Fox. And then in 2003, when this tiny little group of people, you know, turned it into a real open election and we got a new committee and, you know, everything was redone, everyone was like, well, I'm a little bit suspect of that. Surely there should be state-based representation and LUG should be represented on LA and stuff like that. LA now pretty much represents LUGs and everyone's bought into that idea and it's wonderful and LA has become that bottom-up hub. But there's just so much other stuff happening. I'm going to be going to the Slug AGM and pitching that Slug as a sort of a roadmap for everyone else to think about this, really deeply consider changing its name and becoming a software freedom and open source users group, something like that.
Okay. Andrew Cowie, in the back.
Given that I spent a lot of time doing software freedom advocacy, this may sound a bit strange to you, but I just like to mention that myself, I come here for a Linux conference, and the people I interact with, I want to see running Linux. That's the community that I'm most interested in. I do not want to be deeply involved in an organization where everybody's running Windows and just happens to be using OpenOffice and Firefox. And I don't know how to capture that, but I think that we all, most of us, share that sort of subtle undertone, and I think that if change the name if you want, be more inclusive if you want, but there is still that pretty hard-edged limit that ties most of us together. And if we paper over that issue, we're going to be in for a lot of pain.
Okay, Glenn, and then Steve. And after that, I think we'll cut it off there because we could drag this on all day. We can discuss this online.
I just wanted to say, changing the name of the organisation and making the organisation more inclusive is a separate, completely separate issue to the Linux conference, which would still remain a Linux conference.
And Steve.
So there's been a heck of a lot of discussion over the last 2-3 years about changing the branding, getting Linux Australia rebranded to this more open open source type umbrella organisation, and also maybe changing linux.com.au to this more inclusive umbrella sounding conference. I've looked at this and I disagree with Jeff in that I think we have a sufficient brand in both Linux Australia and linux.com.au that we want to keep using that, even if we can, you know, somehow facilitate more other communities joining into our way of doing stuff. And just a few minutes ago, I heard Jeff say it was just window dressing, changing committee to council, and yet now he's saying a name change is really important. And I'm thinking it does require effort on all parties to actually get inclusiveness, and why should we change an existing brand, and yet we can still work for more inclusiveness anyway. So we can have more inclusiveness just by people in our community working for outreach and stuff. And we don't necessarily need to change the name if we can show through our actions and our behaviour and our work that it's important to other communities and other groups that they, you know, come along and have fun with us.
Okay. Jeff has only one final comment and then that's it on this. We can discuss this offline.
Yeah, sorry, I have to respond when someone suggests hypocrisy in action. I do understand your point, and it is amusing that those two things have happened in the last 5 minutes. However, there is no subtle discrimination in the words committee and council. And I believe that that truly is window dressing. It's great that it's passed and all that kind of stuff, but that truly is window dressing. For all of us in this room, and this is why I've been the cantankerous fuck who has brought this up at meetings and brought it up on the mailing list and all this kind of stuff, all of us are totally happy with the Linux Australia name. It is not of concern to us that it's called Linux Australia, because we all are deeply happy with that and it represents our interests and those sorts of things. And I'm certainly, you know, very happy to be represented by Linux Australia. It's how I feel about the world and all those sorts of things. But what I'm trying to do is represent the people who aren't represented by Linux Australia, who do feel that subtle discrimination of the fact that the organization is called something that they, it's not that they don't care about it or that they don't like about it, but their goals are separate, they're different. We have Drupal Australia, we have WordCamp held in Melbourne, we've got the Joomla Day coming up, we've got, you know, MySQL, you've got Open Solaris, you've got all of these amazing open source things happening here in Australia, some of whom are represented by the idea of Linux, and some of whom don't believe that Linux Australia represents them or can be for them, simply because we go by the banner of Linux. And it's not that it's a dispositive thing, it's just that I know that Linux Australia truly believes in open source and software freedom in its totality, rather than just Linux. And I want to make sure that the opportunity that we saw in 2003 to bring together the nation's lugs, we can bring together all of the people who do open source here, which is just vastly wider even than what we see on the LinuxOz mailing list at LinuxConf.au. By the way, I'm not going to bring up that whole thing. I don't think that that's relevant to the issue about, yeah, LinuxConf.au is truly the right solution there. So I just wanted to make that clear point that there is a very big difference between those things.
Okay, I think we need to move on or we're going to be here forever. And obviously this is an issue that a lot of people feel strongly about, so it's worth discussing. But if things are going to change, then someone needs to come up with actual specific proposals or move something forward to put to the membership. But it's good to at least discuss the issues and try to come up with something that we might be able to go ahead with. So is there any other business that we need to cover? Okay, seconded by Steve. The motion from Stuart was that we call the AGM to a close, seconded by Steve. All in favour?
Aye.
Motion is carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.